Hello, everyone. I'm Drew.
I'm Bailey.
I'm Lacey.
And we're sarcastic, so let's get sinister. You guys haven't said anything about my camera working.
Oh, I always forget it doesn't work until it stops working.
Yeah.
It's just not something that's on my mind a lot.
Well, I figured out what the problem was. It's not the camera itself. It's the plug part that goes into my computer. If I bump it, it stops working. So when I have my computer on my lap, I'm more likely to bump it. Mm. But you're up on a table today. Because I want you to be able to see me for this. Now, so I'm just going to jump in. Don't bite me.
Lewis.
He's not home. I'm just going to jump in because I'm excited to tell you about this one because I feel like this is one of those cases that we've heard about, but we don't know about. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
So I'm just going to share my screen. Because I guarantee you that you've heard of this case, but you're just,
What is going on in the background?
Okay, so we got a new bed. It was delivered yesterday. I've put it together, but the mattress came in, like, a plastic wrap thing, because I got it from IKEA.
Right.
And the girls have taken the plastic wrap and put it on the living room floor and pretended that it's the ocean so that they can be mermaids.
Oh, imaginations.
Such imaginations.
I think it's great. It's just very noisy. Hey, don't chew on a shoe. You have so many toys around you.
There's so many rules at Drew's house.
They don't taste like shoes.
So many rules at Drew's house.
Don't chew on the shoe.
All right. So, well, now he came over to give me kisses, and I'm just like, listen, buddy.
Because you're yelling at him.
Don't give me kisses.
Okay. So many rules at Drew's room. Okay. How do I change my slide? There we go. Okay. So, Austin Kelly Harriff was born December 21st, 1996, in Jupiter, Florida, to Mina and Wade Harriff. About 3 years later, Mina and Wade welcomed their second child, Haley. The family lived in an upper-middle-class household, with Wade being a dentist who specialized in cosmetic dentistry. Austin would later describe his mom as very motherly and really nice, and he described his dad as different, kind of loud, a redneck, yet also a nice guy who has a temper sometimes.
Different, kind of loud.
Yeah.
I like that part.
When Austin was around 13 years old, Mina and Wade divorced after about 15 years of marriage. They continued to live close to each other, both interested in being involved in their children's lives. By all accounts, the two co-parented their children really well. Both attended school and extracurricular activities for Austin and Haley, and the children split their time between their two parents equally. However, Austin would later describe feeling insecure and emotionally strained as a result of the divorce. He described feeling like he had to play the peacemaker between his parents, and felt like he couldn't talk to either of them about these struggles. In middle school, Austin was often bullied about his weight. So in high school, Austin started getting obsessed with health and fitness. Despite all these struggles, Austin, as a high schooler, was described as being sweet and gentle, quiet and shy, as well as high achieving by friends and family. He was athletic and popular, playing football and participating in wrestling. He enjoyed posting content online, mostly fitness videos and some motivational stuff. Like many teens, Austin experimented with drugs and alcohol. When he was 17, he started drinking socially and smoking marijuana, reportedly several times a month throughout his final years in high school. He graduated Suncoast Community High School in 2015 with a 3.3 GPA. And around this time, Austin's friends started to notice that he seemed more introverted and withdrawn, but they weren't terribly alarmed. They did notice that his content online started to become more philosophical and spiritual, with Austin reflecting on life, death, and overall existence. Hmm. Thank you.
What'd she say?
She went, oh. After graduating, Austin, what?
I was going to say, like, what other topics are you going to talk about when you're high? You need to talk about your existence.
Mm-hmm.
So that's got to carry over.
Also, just real quick, when you guys recognize or when something starts sounding familiar, let me know.
Okay. Nothing yet for me.
Yeah. We're going a lot of backstory on Austin right now.
Your voice sounds familiar to me.
Oh, perfect. After graduating, Austin enrolled at Florida State University. He first majored in biology, but quickly switched to exercise science. He joined the Alpha Theta Phi fraternity. His frat brothers and other FSU students described Austin as quiet, somewhat reserved, but friendly. It was around this time when Austin began experimenting with new drugs, like mushrooms and LSD.
Ooh.
And Molly.
Oh, well.
And Xanax.
She said, well.
Yeah.
Maybe he's stressed.
No comment about the Xanax?
Maybe he's stressed.
Oh, okay. He also began using Vyvanse and Adderall to help study.
Well, he cares about his education.
But according to one friend, Austin never liked doing drugs.
He does
evidence
an awful
would
lot
suggest
then.
Otherwise.
Maybe whoa. Maybe that's why he's trying so many, because he hasn't found the drug that he likes.
That's a good point. Excellent, yeah. Bailey.
Thank you.
During his first semester at college, friends noticed that he started to become more and more reclusive, and his online content continued to get more and more bizarre.
Well, he started drugs.
Right. So remember in high school, it was like health, motivation, fitness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, then turned spiritual, extra-sensualism. Yeah.
Now he was starting to talk more and more increasingly about demons, possession.
Honestly, that sounds like something I would watch.
Immortality?
Oh.
And feeling different.
No.
Reportedly, he told friends that he was half dog, half man, and had special powers.
No.
No.
Lacey,
I'm going to shut it down right there. No, thank you.
So during winter break, Austin went home, as many children do. Mm-hmm. His family
college
noticed.
College students do.
Children also go home.
You do, but not just in winter.
His family noticed his bizarre and erratic behavior as it progressed. He was talking nonsensically, claiming that people were trying to harm him, and he seemed obsessed with religion and the apocalypse. This behavior continued throughout his spring semester in 2016. His friends voiced their concerns about his mental state, but Austin dismissed them. He began dating a fellow student named Katie in April. She lived in Tampa, and Austin visited her often.
Did she know he was half dog?
I don't think that came up right away. That's not something you bring up on the first date, Lacey.
Does that count as bestiality?
That's what I'm thinking.
He is half man. So.
Okay, but still half dog. Like, I mean.
Listen.
Gross.
During
these
summer.
These are the answers.
These are the questions we need answered.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it feels like you didn't look this up.
Well, hey, listen. Just hold on, okay? Because we're going to get more into that bit.
Bestiality?
Yes.
She's during, so defensive.
During summer break, Austin again returned home, as college students do. His behaviors became increasingly disturbing. He spent most of his time alone in his room, minimizing his interactions with friends and family. When he did interact with them, the conversations were often confusing. He became obsessed with demons, angels, possession, and immortality. He frequently described himself as being possessed by a demon named Daniel.
Maybe we get him some Daniel. Help.
Yeah, Daniel the demon.
Oh.
We love an alliteration.
I certainly do. During this summer break, he told his family, so originally he told his friends, now he is telling his family that he is half dog, half man. He's just sharing.
I mean, if that's how you want to be,
that's how he identifies.
Perceived as, yeah, like you need to make it known.
He started exhibiting intense paranoia. He began accusing people of trying to poison him. And this was all in May and June of the summer break. Well,
to be fair,
a lot going on.
Dogs are, they have a lot of, like, different foods that are toxic to them. So, yeah. Like, he probably saw, like, his mom or whoever use garlic or onions or grapes and think, oh my god, you're trying to kill me. Yeah.
Okay. It's also worth noting.
Tobacco, too.
It's also worth noting, his family reported that Austin began smoking marijuana roughly every other day. So, in July...
He's looking for an escape from Daniel.
Who isn't?
Damn, Daniel.
In July, he began talking about how he was immortal and invincible, and no longer needed sleep or food.
Oh, no.
That's... Nope, that's incorrect.
Because of this, Austin stopped sleeping for days at a time. Instead, he spent his nights awake, pacing, and basically patrolling the hallways of his house for hours.
A little horrifying.
His family and some neighbors reported hearing growling or animal-like noises while he was on patrol.
No.
Why? What year is this?
It was Daniel.
It was 2016.
Why aren't we getting him help?
When he wasn't growling, he was heard muttering to himself about demons, specifically Daniel the demon.
Fucking Daniel.
Around this time, Austin decided his bedroom would be better in the garage. So when he did sleep, he'd sleep on the floor of the garage wrapped in blankets.
Well, the garage floor is cold, Drew.
Okay. What was
that? He needs blankets.
Oh, okay. I was like, okay, what is it? I didn't know okay. What the point of that was.
What? This is all pretty alarming behavior, but I feel like we're past the point of when I would be alarmed as a friend or parent. And what are we doing about this, guys?
I will tell you very soon.
Great.
As a result of Austin's erratic and disturbing behavior, Mina called the police at least once to request a welfare check. Unfortunately, because he hadn't actually committed a crime and didn't appear violent, the police did not take him into custody or mandate treatment. They told Mina that Austin would have to seek voluntary mental health help, but Austin ultimately refused. Both Mina and Wade were at a loss. With Austin refusing to get help and apparently involuntary psychiatric hospitalization wasn't an option, they just supervised him closely and restricted his access to certain areas by locking doors.
Okay, he's like, what, like 21, 22, like...
19.
Okay. He can get through a lock, I'm sure.
But he's a dog, Bailey.
Is he? He's possessed by a demon that probably has thumbs.
Demon dog. Hellhound.
In fact, by the end of July, Mina began feeling so unsafe in her own home, she started locking her bedroom door at night and even sometimes during the day. In Florida, mental health laws require a danger to self or others, or a clear incapacity to qualify for involuntary hospitalization.
I think Florida. That you could argue there's a risk to himself or others if he thinks he's a half-dog demon who's patrolling the halls at night.
I can't imagine, like, coming up and, like approaching the house and being like, okay, he's growling. He doesn't look healthy because he's not eating and he's not sleeping. And he's, like, talking about demons and just being like, he's fine.
Yeah. This is a phase.
Let me know when he starts getting aggressive and then we'll be back. Mm-hmm. All right. So by August, Austin's mental state continued to worsen. During the
no offense to you, but I don't see it just getting better randomly.
Shockingly, he's worse now.
Actually, he had a week where he was like pretty good, but then like had a bad week again.
I wanted you to know that it wasn't stagnant. He was still declining. During the first week, he visited his girlfriend Katie in Tampa and slept only 2 hours a night. He reported starting to see monsters and demon-like figures. Katie noticed that Austin's personality had shifted during this visit. He had become more serious and withdrawn, obsessed with some spiritual mission. So after he left, Katie called Mina, Austin's mom, and told her what happened during the visit.
Seeing shit because that's hallucinations from sleep deprivation.
Yeah. Or drugs.
Oh my god, is he there?
It was a truck.
Is that Austin?
He sent the hellhound.
He's got a really realistic bark.
Yeah. He's had practice. So, guys. So, Katie told Austin's mom how he wasn't sleeping, how he was talking about being immortal, and he was acting really paranoid, emotionally unstable, and she said he was driving recklessly. She told Mina, quote, "You need to call someone. Have him talk to somebody. He is not okay."
Good advice.
Yeah. Excellent advice from Katie. On August 11th, Austin threw away all his drugs. The marijuana, mushrooms, and the Adderall.
Okay.
He texted his mom, quote, "I quit doing every drug. I realize I feel better when I don't smoke. I realize my partying is enjoying the company of other people. Being sober."
What? His partying is enjoying...
Yeah, like, Bailey, when you go to party, you have, like, drinks... friends, music. When he parties, it's just being around other people.
Okay.
Do you understand now, Bailey, what he meant?
Yeah, but like also, yeah.
Okay, so Mina responded, "I'm very proud of you. I hope you know that. And whatever life brings your way, I will always support you."
Okay.
Maybe support him into therapy.
Does she think that he's better now?
Well, maybe she thought his bizarre behavior was because of the drugs. And she was like, okay, so now we're getting rid of them.
What about the lack of sleep? Let's focus drugs. On that.
It's all drugs. Around this time, Austin started to believe that he was becoming Jesus-like.
Oh.
He was gaining superpowers, and people would one day worship him.
Okay.
He continued to tell people that he was half dog, half man, but now he claimed to be able to run super fast and started crouching in bushes outside.
I know this is leading to something tragic, I'm sure, but like the journey is wild.
Is he a what superhero? What if it
wasn't
yet?
Leading to anything tragic and I was just telling you about him?
I wouldn't be mad.
Unfortunately, no, we are leading to something tragic and we're getting closer to it. It was around this time when Austin began extensive Google searches. Do you want to know what he searched on Google?
Yes.
He searched demonic possession, how to let God into your life, and sell your soul to the devil.
Oh, so is he interested in letting God into his life or selling his soul to the devil?
Yeah, he wants options.
Two of those are contradictory.
Options.
You know what, Lacey? It's like when you're picking a college that you're going to,
pros and cons,
opposite ends.
I want you both to pay very close attention to this next part, okay?
Yes.
In addition to those Google searches, he specifically searched for ways to get into contact with
the devil,
Oprah Winfrey.
Oh, well.
He believed she had the power to deliver him from possession or existential threat.
Oprah.
I mean, she gave everyone a car, so.
If anyone can do it, it's Oprah.
You get delivered. You get delivered. I'm funny today.
Did you say I'm funny today?
Yeah.
On the days August 13th and the 14th, Austin's delusions continued to worsen. He started avoiding dark clothing, and he continued Googling. He searched how to know if you're going crazy and beginner's guide to psychosis.
I feel like two things.
Yeah.
If you are Googling how to know when you're going crazy, you're there.
Yeah.
And then there's a beginner's guide to psychosis.
Wait.
Is it like one of those books that's like
for dummies?
Psychosis for dummies?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Comforting.
Yeah, this next part is also very comforting. Great. Austin attended a gun show with his dad on the 14th, where he purchased a switchblade knife.
Good.
It's Florida.
Dad knows everything that's going on with him, right?
Correct.
And dad was like, let's go to the gun show. And then dad also said, buy a switchblade.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, Dad. That's a choice.
At this time, Austin started sleeping near his sister, concerned for her safety. If I was his sister...
I'm concerned for her safety.
If I was his sister, I'd be like, no, thank you. You can stay in the hallway.
Please do not.
An appointment with a psychiatrist had been scheduled to have Austin evaluated.
Woo!
Unfortunately,
I have a feeling we're not going to get to that point, though.
Tragedy struck before then.
Yeah.
On August 15th, 2016, Austin started the day with a few Google searches.
As all of us do.
He does.
Yes. 5 tips to end insomnia and get restful sleep. It's a good one. The weakest thing about a centaur.
Wait, what's the answer for that?
I don't know. You have to Google it.
Okay, hold on.
Sagittarius daily horoscope. Arnold Schwarzenegger. And Ferrari.
He's really all over the place.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I really like the horoscope, though.
Yeah, well, you know, you need to know.
After how do you spell the centaur?
C-E-N-T-A-U-R. After Google searching, he went on a hike at Jonathan Dickinson State Park in Martin County, Florida. During the hike, Austin began hearing voices, feeling invincible, yet also believed he was being chased by Daniel the Demon. After his hike, he returned home and showered. Then he got back on Google and searched Medusa, Fitbit setup, and Blade Lightning. Or Blade Lighting.
Oh. Blade Lightning sounded cool.
Yeah, that's like a cool name.
How do you go from Medusa to Fitbit setup?
First, you have to go become psychotic. And then stop sleeping. And then just kind of have scattered thoughts.
Okay.
Austin's dad, Wade, believed Austin was on the verge of a breakdown. following a phone call he had with him. Do you guys agree? Do you concur?
Yes.
During the call, Austin mentioned...
finally feels the same way.
During the phone call with his dad, Austin mentioned being ready, half horse and half dog.
Oh, oh my god, I have to say. Oh, half horse, half dog.
Yeah, so... no longer man. Wade requested Austin go out to dinner with him and Austin, Wade's girlfriend that night so they could talk in person. He wanted to try and calm him down. I feel like maybe get him some therapy. That evening.
Set, Drew. God.
Did you find out what the weakest part of a centaur was?
It goes into, there's like nine, like there's like articles about like nine facts or like the, there's the top ones, the good, the bad, and the big debate. But the first sentence of that says, in most tales, centaurs were drunken lutes who did nothing but cause trouble.
Okay. My personal opinion is that the weakest part of a centaur is the neck. Or the human part.
Okay.
So that
I would
evening...
disagree.
Oh, okay. We can get more into this later. That evening, Austin, his dad, and the girlfriend went to Duffy's Sports Grill in Jupiter, Florida. During dinner, Austin excused himself to go to the bathroom, but instead, he inexplicably left the restaurant and walked 2 miles to his mother's house. Mina found him in her kitchen trying to drink cooking oil.
Oh.
When she stopped him... What?
Because he needed a laxative?
It's going to be moving through him.
When she stopped him, he poured the oil into a bowl, sprinkled parm cheese on top, and then ate it.
Ew. I don't know why it's worse with the parm cheese. I don't know why that made it grosser.
Everything's better with cheese.
Fair. So Mina called Wade and told him about that. Then she took him back to the restaurant. When they got back, because he has a scheduled dinner with Wade. No, I think Mina was like, that's where Wade is. I'll take Austin back and Wade and I will talk to him.
Okay.
Instead, Wade grabbed Austin and said, what is wrong with you?
Okay.
In response, Austin raised his fist, but Wade's girlfriend intervened. Me. Surveillance footage shows Austin calmly exiting the restaurant at 8:38 p.m. Austin left his phone at the table. Mina called the Jupiter police and reported that Austin had been acting strangely, saying he had superpowers and was immortal. After leaving the restaurant, Austin walked 3.6 miles. As he walked, he discarded his wallet, stripped off most of his clothes, and was reportedly jumping in and out of traffic until he reached 19010 Southeast Kokomo Lane in Tequesta, Florida. That was the home of John and Michelle Stevens. Michelle Karen Mishkon was born March 14, 1963, and grew up one of five children in North Miami Beach. Her father, Jeffrey Mishkon, was the former mayor of North Miami Beach. He was the mayor.
Ah.
Her mother died in 1997 of a heart attack attributed to the use of diet drug combo called Fen-Phen. I don't know. I'm assuming it's something from the 90s. After graduating from Florida State University, Michelle worked at Northwestern Mutual Financial Network as a supervisor. There, she was loved by everyone. Michelle was warm, nurturing, and detail-oriented. Everyone gravitated towards her. Michelle met John Stevens in Miami in the 1990s. John Joseph Stevens III was born on July 2, 1957, making him 59 years old in August 2016. John was a retired Marine working at Prudential Securities when he met Michelle. She worked for him there. When John and Michelle met, they quickly became inseparable. They married on July 2nd, 1997, and were completely devoted to one another. John's son later said, quote, their relationship was just so solid and never in question. Michelle loved me and my sister as if we were her own. After marrying, John opened a landscaping business, but had retired by 2016. He was hardworking, gentle, and kind. John's son remembers, quote, overall, his main thing was kindness. He would always tell me, whatever you do in life, if you're kind to people, you'll be successful. I can tell you my dad was very successful. John had two children from a previous relationship, Ivy and John IV. Michelle, being their stepmother, embraced them as her own. When they got together, Ivy was around 2 years old. John IV, in 2016, was living in Kansas as a Marine and a new father. He had plans to take his newborn daughter out to South Florida soon for her baptism, and John Sr. couldn't wait to take her out on his boat. John and Michelle had turned their garage into a hangout spot for friends and neighbors. They nicknamed it the Garage Mahal.
That's fun.
It had a beachy decor and was furnished with couches, a flat screen TV, a stereo, a little bar, cigar cases, a barbecue grill, an ice maker, and dartboards.
Looks like utter chaos.
Yeah, it's not a great picture, but like, it sounds fun.
It does sound fun.
On the evening of August 15th, 2016, Michelle and John had just celebrated their 19th wedding anniversary the month before. They were doing their normal routine. Michelle was sitting in Garage Mahal, drinking a glass of wine, and John was walking their dog, Rebel. Unbeknownst to them, Austin Harriff was walking down their street. At 9:20 p.m., the Martin County Sheriff's Office received a 911 call from Jeffrey Michael Fisher. Jeffrey had always been a good neighbor. He lived across the street from the Stevensons for some time and was considered a close friend.
I think this is sounding a little bit familiar to me.
Okay.
The neighbor's the one who called 911?
Yeah.
Okay.
When they went on vacation, Jeff fed the dogs. When John's parents lived at home, Jeff once helped when John's dad fell and needed medical attention. Jeffrey was 47 years old at the time in 2016 when he called 911. So when he called, he told the dispatcher that he'd just been stabbed and the attacker was still at the scene. Deputy Grace Zoff was the first to arrive on scene at 19010 Southeast Kokomo Lane. When she arrived, she found Austin Harriff on top of John Stevens in the driveway. He was choking him and gnawing on his face.
Yes, I remember this.
Austin was biting John's face, tearing the flesh away, and spitting the flesh out onto the driveway. Austin was wearing only his shirt and boxers. The deputy pulled her gun and ordered Austin to get off of John. Austin ignored her, continuing to bite and rip off John's flesh. The deputy deployed her taser and tased Austin, but this did nothing. So she tried to handcuff him, but he overpowered her. Backup arrived in the form of Deputy Wayne Trocan. As he approached, he saw a trail of blood about 8 feet wide. He quickly identified that John had multiple stab wounds to his torso and was bleeding profusely. As he approached, he saw Deputy Zoff with her gun drawn. She told Trocan she was going to shoot Austin, but Trocan stopped her. He saw the angle and believed there was a good chance John would be hit. Austin had his legs intertwined and his arm around John. He had his fingers like a fish hook in his mouth, trying to pull his cheek apart, and he was growling. Trocan deployed his taser. Austin was undeterred and continued to maul John. A canine officer arrived on scene next and deployed the dog. The canine latched onto Austin's arm and pulled it off of John, but Austin ripped his arm out of the dog's mouth and grabbed John in a deeper hold. Deputy Trocan began kicking and stomping Austin in the head. The kicks caused Austin's head to come away from John's for a second, but he just went right back into it.
Jesus.
The dog again latched onto Austin's arm, but Austin was unfazed. Trocan continued to kick Austin more than 10 times in total. Finally, Austin flung his arm back, and deputies were able to get a handcuff on his wrist and drag him off of John. That's when Austin began yelling, "Kill me, fucking kill me, shoot me now, I deserve to die." Instead, Austin was taken to a hospital. So, what the hell happened? I'm sure you're wondering.
I think it was the... I don't know, he was very crazy.
Yeah. I mean, he was probably in a psychotic break.
Yeah, he was...
Yeah.
Fucked up in more than one way, I think.
I mean, when I say what the hell happened, I mean less so with Austin, and like, how did we get here? With Austin on top of John. And also, like, how did Jeff get stabbed? And also, where's Michelle?
Oh, I forgot about Jeff. I think we end up with Austin on top of John because his family, I'm willing to throw some blame at his family, allowed him to be crazy for a while. And we're just like, this is probably not something we need to deal with in a proactive, helpful way.
And then also triggered him by grabbing him and saying, "What the fuck is wrong with you?" Instead of being like, "There's something wrong with you. We should get it fixed together." Yeah.
We need to get you actual help. And okay, not but like, say, "I'll support whatever you do." Did they support him after he ripped this guy's face off? That's my question.
In short, yes. I still, like, I feel like you guys are focusing heavily on Austin, and I still, like, do you know where Michelle is?
No, but I'm scared.
No, and I'm worried for her.
Thank you. So, at around 9:15, Jeffrey Fisher was going to bed when he heard screams. He went to his front door and saw Austin across the street slamming Michelle's car door. Michelle exited the garage, approaching Austin, but he grabbed her and threw her to the ground. He stood over her and began attacking. Later, Austin says he had been trying to escape Daniel the demon when he encountered Michelle. She screamed, and then it's all a blur. That's what Austin said. So he's not going to be very helpful in recounting the details of the attack. So Michelle had been relaxing in her garage, enjoying the warm weather, when Austin started up her driveway. Suddenly, Austin violently attacked her. He beat her and stabbed her. Michelle sustained a broken nose. Many of her teeth were knocked out or shattered. She was stabbed multiple times, some defensively and some post-mortem, and her head was slammed in the concrete garage floor. A little bit of trigger warning here. This is a little graphic. The impacts of her head onto the concrete were so violent that they fractured her skull, knocked out her teeth, and tore the scalp from her skull.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Jeffrey ran to her aid, but by the time he got there, Michelle was motionless and quiet, lying in a pool of blood. Austin was standing over her, but turned to look at Jeffrey. He said, "You don't want to. You don't want this. You don't want a part of this." And then he slashed at Jeffrey, slicing his face and body. The two struggled, during which Jeffrey was stabbed or slashed with a knife several times. Jeffrey managed to grab hold of Austin's shirt and pull him to the ground. Then he realized he was bleeding, so he ran for help. He ran into Michelle and John's home, cutting through the backyard, then around to the front. He hid behind a bush, trying to catch his breath. He could hear Austin in the garage, but he couldn't see him.
It's horrifying.
Then he ran back to his house across the street, where he called 911. This is when he realized he'd been stabbed multiple times. He told dispatch that he'd been stabbed in the neck and in the head with 3 puncture wounds. While Jeff escaped, Austin began drinking caustic chemicals he found in the garage, either bleach, drain cleaner, or something along those lines. Police believe he did this in an effort to either kill himself or cleanse himself. It's believed that this is when John returned home from walking his and Michelle's dog, Rebel. It's hard to know what happened because John was murdered and Austin says it was a blur, but John sustained 18 stab wounds to the upper body before being cannibalistically attacked by Austin. This is when the police arrived and used a ton of force to get him off of John. Austin was taken to St. Mary's Medical Center following the attack. In the hospital, Austin struggled against his restraints while continuing to spit out pieces of human flesh, and detectives collected human hair from his mouth. He was listed as stable but critical. Austin had severe internal burns to his esophagus, stomach, and GI tract caused by the chemicals he drank. He suffered organ failure, and doctors believed he wouldn't survive. Initially, Austin was intubated, sedated, and fed through a tube, but slowly, over the weeks, Austin began to stabilize. Nurses and guards observed Austin talk to himself, have hallucinations, and be seemingly unaware of what was going on. While at the hospital, tests were run on Austin's blood. It was heavily speculated by the public, the police, and the media that Austin must have been under the influence of something like bath salts during the attack. Bath salts are a type of synthetic stimulant like amphetamines, cocaine, and MDMA. By this time in 2016, they'd become associated with violent, psychotic, and zombie-like behavior. In Miami, 4 years prior, 31-year-old Rudy Eugene attacked 65-year-old Ronald Popa in the middle of the day in May 2012. Eugene stripped naked, beat Ronald unconscious, and then mauled him. He chewed off his nose, an eye, and parts of his cheeks and forehead. When PD arrived, an officer shot Eugene multiple times, but Eugene just growled at the officer and continued the assault. Ronald eventually survived the attack, but was permanently disfigured and blinded. Eugene had no history of psychological diagnoses, but his family later reported he was religious and occasionally erratic. Again, the media and police heavily speculated that bath salts were involved. Eugene's assault was very similar to three other cases in 2012 and eventually one in 2013. Those four cases involved the attacker being high on bath salts, becoming unpredictable and aggressive, stripping naked, and exhibiting abnormal strength and resistance to pain. So those four, the one with Eugene and the one with Austin, all had a lot of similarities. Would you concur?
Yes.
Although similar to those four cases, one contrasting piece of evidence was that Rudy Eugene was later found to have had only marijuana in his system, no bath salts. And after checking Austin's blood, no traces of marijuana, methamphetamine, or cocaine were found. The FBI even analyzed a sample of his blood because they have capabilities to check for a wider variety of toxins. Mm-hmm. They found no evidence of flaca or bath salts.
Huh.
So in the toxicology report, Austin was found to have several drugs in his system that were given to him while he was at the hospital, as well as minimal levels of THC and ethanol. At the crime scene, investigators collected a corkscrew, a pair of scissors, and a folded knife, all with blood on them. By the way, I know that you guys are probably wondering, their dog, Rebel, was okay and stayed with Ivy, John's daughter.
Curious what we used the corkscrew for.
Yeah.
Okay.
John's autopsy found that he'd suffered multiple stab wounds, and Michelle died of blunt force trauma. The medical examiner reported that both Michelle and John died quickly due to the extent of their injuries. John was 59 and Michelle was 53. Afterwards, the Harriff family released a statement. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
There are no words we can offer to give any real comfort to this tragic loss. We love our son and know he is not the person some are making him to be for their own purposes. We will allow the full legal process to find the facts and the truth.
Honestly, I think they're better off not releasing any kind of statement.
Yeah. While still in the hospital, on October 3rd, 2016, Austin and Wade did an interview via Skype with Dr. Phil. The footage was initially pulled, but eventually aired on March 2nd, 2017. During the interview, Austin seemed confused and mentally fragile. He spoke about hallucinations, his delusional state, and expressed remorse. Wade spoke about feeling devastated, and he apologized to the victim's family. Families. In response, John Stevens' son, John, said that the Dr. Phil interview was nothing less than a PR ploy to win hearts and minds for a killer who should get the death penalty.
I feel like Dr. Phil had, like, no business getting involved in this at all. He's such a vulture.
So, like, it also feels like you're trying to monopolize.
Yeah.
An awful, like, tragedy.
He also, think of Austin, who's confused, out of his mind. Like, why are you putting him on such a public stage? Like, why are you doing that to your child?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, John Stevens' son believed the interview was a ploy to sway a jury not to offer a confession with remorse.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a direct quote from him that I really like. "The Harris, this family, are disgusting. They have lost nothing, and for them to apologize, they have no idea what we've lost. If he wants to apologize to me, I'll accept it when he submits himself to the legal system. Otherwise, he can go fuck himself."
Yeah.
That's John, the kind of thing, like, he went on to say that because Dr. Phil didn't reach out to any of the victims, he was simply in it for the money.
Oh, for sure.
Quote, "Dr. Phil is fat Jerry Springer to me."
But at least Jerry Springer didn't pretend like he was involved in anything other than family drama.
Austin was discharged and released from the hospital that same day after having spent 49 days in the hospital. He was transported by detectives from St. Mary's to Martin County Jail. When he first arrived at the jail, he already had a package waiting for him. Because it was sent anonymously, he was not allowed to receive it, but it was a book called When Life is Over, The Truth About What Awaits You After Death. The following day, Austin was officially charged with 2 counts of first-degree murder, 1 count of attempted first-degree murder with a weapon, 1 count of burglary of a dwelling while armed, and 1 count of resisting an officer without violence. Austin was facing life in prison or the death penalty. Austin was held in the Martin County Jail's medical housing unit without bond. He was immediately put on suicide watch and given special status, meaning he must be handcuffed and escorted by 2 deputies anytime he was out of his cell. And if he was taken out of the medical unit, he would be required to wear leg restraints and a belly chain. By December, he was taken off suicide watch, but still required to see medical staff at least 3 times a week. Originally, Austin's jury trial was scheduled for July 2017, but justice for Michelle and John was delayed repeatedly. Pre-trial motions, psychiatric evaluations, legal delays, the COVID pandemic, and Austin's health kept pushing the trial date back further and further. Over the course of 6 years, Austin's mental state was evaluated by several experts as the defense prepared for an insanity defense. Jailhouse phone calls to his parents were released in June 2017. During a phone call early in his imprisonment, Austin cried to his dad, quote, "It just sucks. I just want to be a normal kid again."
Oh, no.
But then he and his dad started discussing diet and exercise. But in between the small talk, Wade warned Austin, "I don't want you drawing anymore. Or sorry, I don't want you drawing anything anymore. You talk to Brandon about that?" And Austin replied, "Yeah, I ripped it all up and threw it away." Wade said, "You got to be strong here. And remember, don't talk to anybody about anything about the past." Before ending the call, Wade again reminds Austin, "We got to be careful about things. I can't emphasize this enough." Austin responds, "I understand that." And his dad then says, "You don't go talking to them about the bad times." During another phone call, Austin described to his dad that jail was the hardest thing he's ever been through.
So wow. Crazy. You ate somebody's face off once.
"It's just really hard adjusting to jail," is what he told his dad. Mm-hmm. And his dad said, "I know you need to get a," he said, "I know, you need to get a Bible, Austin." Then he said, I'm real proud of you, how you didn't answer any questions. I'm going to get you the best lawyer I can buy because I love you, buddy. I'll hire two lawyers.
He's so... Like, it feels like such mega coddling, too.
Yeah.
Like, he's a grown-up. You're like, I'm so proud of you, my boy, for not answering questions. I'm going to give you the best lawyers. We're going to take care of this.
Precious boy.
During a later call, Wade told him, quote, I'll never give up on you. I promise, okay? Austin, you got to stay strong here, son. It's going to be the toughest thing you've ever done, but you've got to stay strong. Tougher than attacking two people. Three people. During conversations with his mom, Austin continued to whine about feeling isolated in the medical unit and how he just wants to go outside and be with his family.
Sucks.
Quote, it's just so hard to get used to. Mina told him, Austin, I know. Be strong. Baby, you're going to be okay. Every day you're going to get stronger. He told his mom that he was working out and doing physical therapy, but he often felt bored.
Physical therapy for what?
Well, I mean, he did sustain a lot of injuries. Oh. He drank chemicals. The dog bit him a couple times. Police officer kicked him in the face a bunch. So.
Okay.
He then asked for more money in his account and asked if someone would bring him Muscle magazines, Time magazine, an easy-to-read Bible, and a journal to write in. In August 2018, Jody Bruce, Michelle's sister, announced that her family, feeling as though this was their only legal remedy, and with the two-year statute of limitations nearing, filed a wrongful death lawsuit against Austin Harriff. After listening to every minute of Austin's jailhouse phone calls, the family grew angry. During the announcement, Jody said, specifically, we have not heard in hundreds of hours of calls a single expression of remorse. Not only hasn't Austin expressed remorse, but according to his own words, he is at peace with himself and he is happier than he has ever been in life. He has been even referring to his time in jail as like being on vacation.
Oh, great.
We are tired of and sickened by Austin being portrayed by his team as a normal college student who must be suffering from some kind of mental illness because there's no other explanation for what he did. In the suit, there is mention of illegal drug use and violent acts causing Austin's own family to lock their doors at night in fear. The family's attorney, Evan Fetterman, stated, there's no doubt who did this. Almost 2 years after this heinous attack, there's still been no trial. Harriff remains in the Martin County Jail with the ability to make unlimited phone calls and receive comforting packages from his family. As of now, August 2025, there is no public record regarding this lawsuit. So I don't know what happened. But I do think he looks great.
You got that.
Yeah. Finally, in November 2022, Austin Harriff appeared in front of Circuit Judge Sherwood Bauer. He pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity to all the charges. After hearing testimony from two mental health experts, Judge Bauer accepted the plea. Both state and the defense hired an expert to examine and evaluate Austin. Both experts concluded and testified that Austin suffered an acute psychotic episode and couldn't distinguish between right and wrong. I want to note that a third mental health expert evaluated, or a third expert was hired by the prosecution and evaluated Austin. He was supposed to testify regarding Austin's mental state. Michael Gamache, the mental health expert, concluded that Austin was not insane at the time of the murders and basically concluded that he had psychosis as a result of going through withdrawal after doing various drugs for over a year, then cutting them off cold turkey. But Gamache had to withdraw from testifying for personal health reasons, and the judge denied the state's request to hire another mental health expert. The court, including Austin, his family, and his three defense attorneys, then listened to nearly 2 hours of impact statements from Michelle and John's families. First, Michelle's sister, Cindy Mishkon, spoke. She disagreed with the expert's findings. In her statement, she stated that she listened to the jailhouse phone calls she read Austin's text messages, which had been made public, from a year before the murders. In the text messages to her, it outlined the life of a college student, smoking marijuana, experimenting with other drugs, and abusing alcohol. The phone calls, she said, seemed to disparage John and Michelle and minimize Austin's role in the murders. I quickly realized from listening to those calls that you don't care about how your actions have affected my family. You don't care that you murdered my parents. You don't care that you murdered my parents' firstborn child. You don't care about anyone but yourself. In fact, the only victim that you and your family see in all of this is you and the Harif name. She insisted Harif was not insane when he committed the homicides. She called the findings of the mental health experts outright lies. Here we are opening the prison doors for a double murderer. Four words come to mind. White rich boy justice. Another one of Michelle's sisters testified, Jody Bruce. Nora, go back to your room. She started by saying Michelle had two sisters, a brother, a father, two stepkids, a niece, and a nephew who loved her. We suffer. I suffer every day. Michelle was our everything. My family is broken. We will never be repaired. My sister was the nicest person. She would do anything for anyone. She was so happy. She had such a great life. She smiled. She laughed all the time. You beat her up. You stopped her. John's daughter, Ivy Stevens, also read a statement. My dad and Michelle were like magnets. They attracted people to them because of who they were. They were fun, genuine, caring people who just wanted to be happy and make everyone around them happy. They built an incredible life together that I don't believe many people will ever be able to attain. When I think of Michelle, I try to imagine how she felt when she found you staring back at her, how her breaths left her body out of fear. I cannot even begin to imagine how terrified she must have been when you attacked her, beat her, stabbed her, broke her nose, knocked out her teeth, hit her head so hard into the concrete that you partially scalped her. The last words that my father spoke were used to beg for his life. Help me. Get him off of me. Please help. She finished her address to Austin by calling him a disgusting animal. Then she turned towards Austin's parents. I feel like Lacey's going to like this part. Why didn't you intervene if you were so worried about your son? You shouldn't have let him leave your house that night of August 15th if he was acting strange. You should have stopped him and reasoned with him, asked him what was wrong and how you could have helped him. Then she turned back to Austin. You are not the victim. You're a murderer, a monster, and a coward for not taking responsibility for what you did. You've ruined lives and taken others. You've caused inexplicable grief, a sadness that cannot be cured. Austin sat motionless the entire time. After the statements were read, Judge Bauer committed Austin to a secure mental health facility until doctors and a judge agree he is no longer a danger. He cannot be released without a court order. Rest assured, though, because a law professor from University of Miami, Craig Trocino, said that the finding of not guilty by reason of insanity is effectively a life sentence because it's highly unlikely that they'd risk releasing a killer as notorious as Austin Harif. Okay. But, you know, I feel like because he was committed so young, he's probably going to get out when he's like 50.
Yeah.
After the trial, Austin's defense attorney, Nellie King, said the case had always been about mental health. Prior to the murders, Austin had good grades, a gentle demeanor, and no criminal record. The assistant state attorney, Brandon White, announced that we, the prosecution, were not happy with this either, the ruling. He began looking at trying to change the laws in Florida. We shouldn't give the keys to the prison, so to speak, to psychologists. He argued that you could probably find a psychologist to say whatever you wanted them to say. So not guilty by reason of insanity is basically letting the defendant off completely. He wants to change the conviction to guilty but insane so that the person could be deemed insane at the time of the commission of the crime, but still be given a prison sentence. He also wants to expand the state's definition of voluntary intoxication. It only takes into account the actions someone takes while actively intoxicated, not the actions they take while experiencing psychological impacts from withdrawal or long-term drug use. Currently, there's no public record that legislation was introduced or passed, and Florida law remains unchanged. Not guilty by reason of insanity is still the only verdict option for defendants shown to be insane at the time the crime was committed. At the end of January 2023, Austin was transferred to Florida State Hospital, a sprawling complex that maintains 469 beds in two different maximum security forensic units. The process for Austin's treatment, progress, and periodic psych evals is after the first 6 months. So in June 2023, the attending psychiatrist sent a review to the judge. Then the attending sends annual reviews to the judge with a recommendation as to whether or not to continue treatment. In response, when asked for comment, John Stevens' son told a reporter that he hadn't been told that Austin had been transferred, and just amazing that you can kill two people and get treated this way by the justice system as long as you're a white kid. We all know this would not be the outcome if he were not who he is. So I just want to, well, I'm almost done. The key ingredient in hallucinogenic mushrooms is psilocybin. When ingested, it alters the chemicals in your brain, causing a sense of euphoria or hallucinations. Hallucinogen persisting perception disorder is a non-psychotic disorder in which a person experiences lasting or persistent visual hallucinations after using drugs. So some people who use shrooms deal with the effects for weeks up to years after last ingesting mushrooms. Although rare, this disorder causes flashbacks, fear, agitation, delirium, psychosis, and other symptoms that can resemble schizophrenia. Certain things can make the symptoms of HPPD worse, such as cannabis, infectious disease, emotional stress, alcohol, and opiate withdrawal, and fatigue. It's a rare condition, but it sounds like something.
Yeah.
On the other hand, the onset of schizophrenia usually occurs after puberty, with most people being diagnosed in their late teens to early 30s. Males typically develop symptoms earlier than females. With Austin being combative while in the hospital, it's likely that the medical staff used a sedative on him. Then when he was intubated, he was definitely sedated. Haldol and olanzapine are both sedatives, but also antipsychotic medications. They're used to treat agitated and delirious patients and also schizophrenia. They help to reduce hallucinations and delusions. Obviously, this is all speculative because of HIPAA, but if they gave Austin one of those medications to sedate him, it could have also helped treat schizophrenia. However, in my experience, propofol is most commonly used to sedate an intubated patient, and that drug is not an antipsychotic. So,
my theory with that is you're not on antipsychotics just once and you fix a problem. You need repeated doses of it. So, like, how long do those drugs metabolize for him to
so that's my thing. It's because, like, during the Dr. Phil interview, he wasn't being chased by Daniel the demon. He wasn't growling. So either he's no longer psychotic or he's being treated. And because of HIPAA, I don't know, maybe they are treating him for something, but when you're intubated, they have you on a propofol drip.
Yeah.
So you're constantly being sedated. Yeah. But remember how after he woke up, nurses and guards were saying he was still having hallucinations and talking to himself and stuff. So maybe it was like still kicking in at that point.
Okay. You could buy that a little bit.
So what do you think?
I am dissatisfied.
I like the idea of insane,
guilty but insane.
Yeah. Because then it's like
not guilty by reason of insanity. It feels like it takes a lot of the like responsibility off of the person.
Like, I don't maybe like the
maybe
you
not
were clinically
guilty. Insane at the time, but you still did it.
Yeah. I don't like the not guilty part because he did do it. So he is guilty of the crime.
Right.
And the other thing is that like I feel like there should be more blame put on him because it wasn't like he was having a normal life and then all of a sudden psychotic break, murder two people. He had been acting this way for a year and people were just ignoring it or being like, well, that's alarming.
Yeah. And I know that we can't like punish people for not getting somebody else like help. I don't, that would set like a risky precedent, I think. And there's a lot of like gray area there, but I feel like I would like to punish his parents a little bit.
Yeah.
So remember how there was like that school shooter and his parents got found guilty of like helping him because they like bought the gun and they like left it accessible to him after having been told by the school several times that like we're finding weird drawings, he's saying weird shit. And they were just like, meh.
Yeah.
And then he ended up killing people.
I feel like that's a little bit easier to make like a punishable thing, especially if it's your kid's a minor versus an adult who's acting crazy and you just.
Yeah.
Like if they'd gone out and like bought him, like if at the gun show his dad had bought him a weapon and then he went and used that weapon, then I think maybe there's an argument there. But I think we can't just be like, you should have got him help and you didn't, and now we're gonna enforce this with the law. But I would like to enforce it with the law.
I want that civil lawsuit to be successful because I feel like since we can't punish his parents criminally,
take their money.
Yeah. And I also like that when I started reading this stuff about like the rich white stuff, I was like, oh, it's becoming a race thing. But the victim's family is also all white. So, like.
But I think he did have a point. Yeah, I think if they had a young black guy who wandered into the neighborhood and did it, or I think not white or poor.
Yeah.
If it was a poor kid, would have been treated a little bit differently.
And that's that's why I kind of feel like they ignored his symptoms because they were like, we're not going to address it. He's just going to get better.
Yeah. We're not going to embarrass the family.
Right.
By committing our son somewhere.
Exactly. Or like admitting that he has problems.
Yeah.
I would like Florida to have the option of a involuntary psychiatric hold.
Yeah, that feels like something we should do.
Because like that felt like we could have maybe
avoided this
a little early.
Yeah.
That's not an option is a little concerning. Because if you're having you have to want to get help. And if you're crazy,
you might not know
things
that you
are telling
you
not to get help.
Yeah, exactly. You might not, what Lacey said, you might not know that you need the help. Although, to be fair, he was Googling how to know if you're insane or something like that.
He was also Googling Oprah Winfrey's phone number or something, so.
And Ferrari.
She's America's treasure, Lacey. Okay?
And the weakest part of a centaur.
Well,
that was sinister.
And we were sarcastic.
And we hope you keep listening.